Lecture 11, Latino Language and Dialects in America.
A lot of native English speakers in America are nervous. They're worried that Spanish is taking over. The population of people of Latin American heritage has soared over the past few decades, and there now seems to be more Spanish than ever before in America, at least since the late 1700s, when Spain was still a dominant colonial power. You can hear Spanish all around you, and more you can see it on signs in stores and other business establishments, on instructions that come with gadgets and medical products, and on voting ballots and census forms. It seems like you can't even make a simple phone call without having to choose between English and Spanish. For English, press 1. Para español, marque 2. ¿Quiere escucharme en español? Probablemente no. Do you want to listen to me in Spanish? Probably not. This very visible and audible presence of Spanish may make us think that native Spanish speakers who come into America will stop learning English and that their children will also grow up monolingual in Spanish. Why would they have to learn English anymore? It seems like anyone could get by just fine with Spanish in this country. In fact, maybe native English speakers will have to start learning Spanish to keep up. Or maybe we'll have to end up splitting into two countries, one for Anglophones and one for people who prefer Spanish. Let's investigate what's happening. The history of America is a history of immigration. And throughout the course of American history, English has never been in danger. Never before, anyway. Immigrants may have started out speaking non-English languages, but they and their descendants very quickly shifted to English. This happened with the earliest immigrants from continental Europe, like the Germans, the Irish, and the Scandinavians. It happened with the so-called new immigrants of the early 20th century, Southern and Eastern Europeans. And of course, it happened with the speakers of other languages who were already in North America when English speakers first got there. Speakers of Native American languages, and yes, Spanish. When people from a particular country immigrate to a new country where a new language is prominent, the linguistic result is almost always what we call a three-generational pattern of language shift. What this means is that, in the overwhelming majority of cases, when a family comes to a new country, the immigrant generation, the first generation, will speak only or mostly the old language. Their children, the second generation, will be bilingual, though they may already be dominant in the majority language, English in the case of the U.S. By the third generation, the children are mostly monolingual in English. They might be able to understand the heritage language, and they might use it to a limited extent in certain arenas, maybe music or religion, but mostly English predominates. But does the three-generational pattern hold for people of Latin American heritage in the U.S. today? Most immigrants today are from Mexico, by a large margin, and there are four more Latin American countries in the top 10, El Salvador, Cuba, the Dominican Republic, and Guatemala. Altogether, the Latino American foreign-born population of the U.S. totals 15.7 million. When you add in people of Latin American descent who were born in the U.S., the population is 54 million. That's a lot of people whose heritage language is Spanish. Surely that must be enough for Spanish to hold its own, and maybe even spread across the U.S. and across the generations. Surely Latin Americans must be bucking the traditional trend for immigrant groups in the U.S. Well, actually they're not. Let's consider some statistics from the Pew Research Center. These are based on the latest U.S. Census figures and estimates, and on the Pew Hispanic Center's recent national survey of Latinos. The figures are for adults over 18. We'll talk about figures for kids in a minute. The percentage of first-generation Latinos, immigrants from Latin America, who report speaking English very well or pretty well, is 38%. For the second generation, it leaps up to 92%. And by the third and higher generation, the figure is 96%. The figures for reading ability in English are basically the same. 37%, 91%, and 94% report reading English very well or pretty well as we move from the first to the third generation. As English ability increases, Spanish fades. 91% of adult first-generation Latino Americans report speaking Spanish very well or pretty well. The figure drops to 82% for the second generation. And by the third generation, Only 47% of people of Latin American heritage report speaking Spanish very well or pretty well. And even fewer can read it, only 41%. Now, linguists who have studied language maintenance and loss in detail have pointed out that numbers alone don't necessarily tell the whole story. The extent of language shift also depends on where the heritage language is used and with whom, the so-called domain of language use. Typically, when a heritage language recedes, it's lost first in public official spheres like school and the workplace, and in interactions with government officials. It's maintained longer in more private spaces, in places that are closer to people's hearts, at home and in church, for example. And as long as the heritage language is maintained in the home and is spoken to new generations of speakers, it can be retained, even among fairly small numbers of speakers. But once it ceases to be passed down to kids, once so-called intergenerational transmission fails to occur, then the language is in trouble. And that's the story with Spanish in the U.S. It's still spoken in the home, but it's slowly receding. In the year 2000, 78% of Latinos age 5 and older reported speaking Spanish in the home. In 2013, it was down to 73%. And even when Spanish is spoken in the home, it goes hand in hand with English. 41% of Latinos age 5 and older who report speaking Spanish in the home also report that they speak English very well. And 26% report speaking English to some degree. So Spanish is fading from the home sphere. Latino kids now speak English, including foreign-born kids. In 1980, 43% of foreign-born Latino children spoke English in the home or spoke English very well. That figure skyrocketed to 70% in 2013. Spanish is also fading from other spheres, from leisure activities where we might expect it to hang on. 49% of first-generation adult Latinos report listening to music, mostly in Spanish. In the second generation, this falls to 18%, and in the third generation, to only 10%. In the third generation, by far the majority of Latinos listen to music in English, 74%. The same basic trend holds for watching TV and the TV news. And finally, getting really personal here, 65% of first-generation adult Latinos report that they think mostly in Spanish. Only 18% of second-generation Latinos report the same. Among the third and higher generations, only 13% report thinking mostly in Spanish. 80% report that they think mostly in English. So, like other immigrant groups before them, Latino Americans are experiencing the classic three-generational pattern of language shift, heritage language loss. And all this despite continuing population increases and what seems to be an increasing sense among Latinos that retaining Spanish would be a good thing to do. 95% of adult Latinos report that it's either very important or somewhat important that future generations of Latinos in the U.S. speak Spanish. That's what they'd like, but that's just not what's happening. Latinos recognize the cultural value of their heritage language, but they also know that it's English that has the practical value in the U.S., that English is what's important when it comes to succeeding, economically, culturally, and personally. 87% of adult Latinos report that learning English is necessary for their success in the U.S., and still, no matter how much they still value Spanish, they're not passing it down to their kids. So despite the seeming preponderance of Spanish in the U.S., despite concerns for the safety of American English in the face of Spanish, there's actually no cause for alarm. If anything, it's U.S. Spanish that's in trouble, not U.S. English. In some ways, this may seem okay. If you come to America, it's not a bad idea for you to learn English, right? But in another way, the loss of Spanish among Latinos in the U.S. is just like the loss of any other heritage language. You lose a part of your culture and of yourself when you lose a language. But there are ways of holding on to your linguistic and cultural heritage, even as your ancestral language fades away. Descendants of non-English-speaking immigrant groups in the U.S. can, and often do, develop distinctive dialects of English. And these dialects can at least partly take the place of the heritage languages that are lost. And they can come to serve as important markers of cultural and ethnic identity. Remember the cases of Jewish American English and African American English. These are two very important dialects that have risen to prominence precisely because they've become such strong symbols of cultural identity and cultural pride. And the same thing is happening with Latinos in the U.S. Since the latter half of the 20th century, as waves of immigrants from Latin America have poured in, we've seen the rise of a number of varieties of Latino English. For example, there's Miami English in Florida, Puerto Rican English in New York City, and Chicano English in the Southwest. More recent Latino English varieties have also been arising in other big cities, like Chicago, and in the U.S. Southeast. In fact, the Southeastern and Mid-Atlantic states have seen the greatest percentage increase in Latino population of anywhere in the U.S. in recent decades. So it shouldn't be surprising that new dialects are springing up there. Ethnicity-based American dialects are mired in misunderstandings, and talking about them can be tricky. So before we talk about the characteristics of Latino English, or more accurately, Englishes, let's sort out some terminological issues and dispel some misconceptions. First, what do we call the dialect we're talking about? I've already used a couple of labels. Latino English is probably a good general label, while terms like Puerto Rican English and Miami English can be used to describe specific regional varieties of Latino English. Chicano English is also a fairly general label, though it's usually applied to the variety of Latino English spoken primarily by Mexican Americans in the southwestern U.S., not varieties in the Northeast, Southeast, or Midwest. The term Hispanic is also problematic. It comes from Hispania, a term used in ancient Rome to refer to the Iberian Peninsula. Today, Hispanic is sometimes used to describe people of European Spanish heritage, as well as those of Central and South American descent, so it can be a bit confusing. I have some friends from Spain, and they're never sure whether to indicate the box indicating Hispanic ethnicity or not. What do you think? People of non-Latino descent in the U.S. sometimes use Mexican as a general label, but we want to avoid this too, since Latino Americans come from a range of different countries and dialect areas. And even the term Latino isn't perfect. The word Latino is a masculine form. Latina is the feminine. It's standard in Spanish to use masculine nouns to refer to groups of both males and females, but it can still feel less than inclusive to refer to an entire population with a masculine noun. So some people might use Latino slash a. You might also see the word Latino with an at sign in place of the final letter. Despite this issue, we'll stick with the term Latino, especially since you can't actually pronounce the word with the at sign. Now, let's clear up a couple misconceptions about Latino English. First, many people think that speakers of Latino English are first language speakers of Spanish, which introduces mistakes into their English. In reality, Latino English is a full-fledged dialect of English, not learner English. It's a variety of English spoken by native speakers. Its speakers might also know Spanish, but they might not. They might sometimes sound like they have a Spanish accent, but that's because some of their pronunciation features did actually originate in learner English, but in their grandparents' day, or their parents, not their own. Second, people sometimes equate Latino English with what's sometimes known as Spanglish. But Spanglish isn't an English dialect. It's a way of speaking that involves switching between Spanish and English, what we call code switching. And code switching involves more than just using a Spanish word or two here and there, like maybe hola for hello or hasta pronto for see you later. It involves more complex interweaving of words, phrases, and grammatical structures, even in the course of a single sentence. So something like es un little boy for it's a little boy. People often look down on code switching, but it actually takes a lot of skill in both languages. And just like Latino English, it can be a marker of cultural identity. But remember, Latino English requires only native English language skill. A third misconception is that Latino English is the speech of youth gang members. But that's no more true of Latino English than it is of any other dialect of English. Some speakers of Latino English are young, and some of them are in gangs. But like any other full-fledged dialect, Latino English is used by a full range of speakers of all ages and all types of social groups. from young people who defy authority to middle-aged, middle-class people who are the authorities. If we want to talk strictly about the language of young people or of one particular type of social group, we'd need a term other than dialect. Slang would figure into it, or we could use the word argot, another term used to refer to an in-group way of using language. Finally, we have to remember that Latino English is not bad English or broken English. It's regularly patterned and governed by unconscious rules, like all dialects, whether they're labeled as standard or non-standard, or mistakenly held to be substandard. So what are some of the features of Latino English? Some of its pronunciation features derive from the native Spanish of the first immigrant generation, which again is why Latino English is often mistaken for Spanish-accented English. For example, the E and U vowels may be pronounced with a more clipped quality than we find in other American English dialects. So beat sounds like beat, and boot like boot. It's subtle, I know, but it's there. Technically, what's happening is that Latino English speakers are pronouncing these vowels as monophthongs, as one-part vowels. In other varieties of English, the vowels are usually diphthongs, two-part vowels, and they glide slightly in the mouth instead of staying in one place. Another vowel feature involves fully pronouncing vowels that tend to get reduced in other varieties of English. So in general American English, we have today, which is actually ta plus day. In Latino English, we're likely to hear today, two plus day. A third vowel feature involves the way a vowels are pronounced. In many American English varieties, a, as in ash, is pronounced almost like ea, especially when it comes before sounds like n and m, as in sand or ban. But in Latino English, a sounds more like ah, even when it comes before n's and m's. So sand is sand, and ban is more like ban. Another distinctive characteristic involves ing endings in words like talking and going. In Latino English, these may be pronounced almost like ing, so a word like going can sound almost like going. Almost, but not quite. It's an in-between pronunciation. There are a couple of other in-between pronunciations that can play into exaggerated stereotypes. In Latino English, the e and I vowels in words like sheep and ship can be merged together so that both words sound something like sheep. But again, not exactly, though you'll sometimes hear people imitating or making fun of the dialect with exaggerated E sounds. The same thing goes for another Latino English merger, which involves the blending together of sh and ch sounds. So something like choose for shoes and vice versa, shoes for choose. So in somewhat exaggerated form, I like your new shoes, but they're not what I'd choose. A grammatical feature that originated in language transfer from Spanish is the use of barely to mean just recently, as in I barely broke my leg, to mean that I recently broke my leg. This usage seems to blend the Spanish meaning of apenas, scarcely, hardly, with a related meaning for the word barely in English, in sentences like, do you have to leave? You barely got here. And then, of course, there are lexical items that come from Spanish, but it can be hard to tell which ones can be considered features of Latino English and which are more general English usages, since Spanish lexical influence on American English was pretty pervasive, especially in the early days of American colonization and independence. Don't forget, Spanish was already well established in parts of the Americas by the time the first English speakers got here. One of the most widespread features of Latino English has to do with speech rhythm. In most dialects of English, stressed or accented syllables are of longer duration than other syllables. So in a sentence like, she just kept on talking, the ta of talking is actually longer and louder than the other syllables. In Latino varieties, syllables are more evenly distributed. So something like, she just kept on talking. Again, this is due to original Spanish influence. Since Spanish is a so-called syllable-timed language, and English is what we call stress-timed. But again, Latino English isn't Spanish-accented learner English. It also includes features that have nothing to do with Spanish. These include features that are common across a range of vernacular English dialects. For example, double negatives and the use of was for all persons and numbers for past tense be. I was, you was, we was, etc. And Latino Englishes are also influenced to greater or lesser degrees by various specific vernacular American English dialects, depending on where they're spoken and who's speaking. So, for example, Puerto Rican English in New York City includes features of African American English, like habitual be, as in I be working late, meaning I always or usually work late. It also includes traditional New York City regional pronunciations like arlessness, as in mother and father. And recently, it seems that New York City Puerto Ricans are even adopting and adapting words that originally come from Yiddish. One linguist reported hearing "what the schmuck" as an expression of surprise used by young New York City Puerto Ricans, or Nugaricans, as they sometimes call themselves. In other areas of the U.S., the mix will be different. In California, speakers of Chicano English use some features that have come to characterize the speech of young white Californians. For example, they might use pronunciations like dude for dude, or they might use uptalk, ending a sentence like a question. The latter feature is actually fairly common in other varieties of Latino English too, just as it is among young Americans in general. But still, it's part of the California area Chicano English language mix. Remember, dialects are unique because they consist of unique mixes of features shared by other dialects, not because they consist solely of unique features. The exact mix of features that Latino English comprises varies from region to region. It can differ among social groups in a given region, among individuals, and even within individuals, depending on how they're presenting themselves from one moment to the next. As part of their studies of New York Latino English, linguists Peter Slomanson and Michael Newman found that Latinos in different high school peer groups use different types of dialect features. Those who associate with hip-hop culture use more features of African-American vernacular English than those who associate with other peer groups. For example, they use more pronunciations like tam for time than their classmates who hang out with so-called skaters, the skateboarders, or the geeks, a group that's more family-oriented than focused on teenage friends. Similarly, sociolinguist Carmen Fott found that Chicano teenagers in Southern California use different mixes of features, depending on the degree and type of affiliation they had with area gangs. One group, called taggers, had sort of a mixed affiliation. They adopted some superficial characteristics of gangs, but they weren't really considered to be bona fide members. Their linguistic features mirrored their in-between social status. Like gang members, they used lots of double or multiple negation in something like, I didn't do nothing. In fact, they actually overdid it a bit and used more double negatives than genuine members. At the same time, they used features associated with white California English at a higher rate than gang members. For example, the dude for dude pronunciation. Traits like these may be subtle, but combine them with other symbols of group identity, like clothing styles and even makeup, and something as small as a vowel pronunciation can go a long way toward presenting oneself as one particular type of Latino versus another. And it turns out that linguistic traits can change over time, sometimes pretty dramatically. Sociolinguist Philip Carter has researched Spanish and Latino English in North Carolina. This is in the heart of the Southeast, where the Latino American population has increased exponentially in recent decades. In one fascinating study, Carter documented how one person, a young Mexican-American girl named Maria, changed her linguistic usages over the course of a couple years. Maria began life as a monolingual Spanish speaker, but by the time Carter met her, she was 10 years old and a fluent bilingual speaker of Spanish and English. She was also one of only a handful of Latino students at a mostly white school. When she spoke English, she sounded basically white, and not even Southern, since she was going to a school whose students were mostly white children of transplants from New England, the Midwest, and West. But then Maria began attending a more mixed school, one that included African American, Latino, and white students. And suddenly, she began sounding Latina. She began using the features of Latino English. And for the first time, she began calling herself Mexican. So essentially, Maria crafted a new identity. And a key part of her new self was her new English dialect. She didn't need Spanish per se. It was Latino English that marked her out as being distinct from her white and African American classmates, as being Latina. Now, Maria's story and the story of New Yorkers in New York City and taggers in California all show that a distinctive dialect of English can be a key component of an identity that's rooted in Spanish-speaking heritage. They also illustrate just how much agency people can have in making linguistic choices. We may tend to think that people's linguistic usages are mostly a product of where they're from, but really, we all have a lot of say in the matter of how we sound and write and text. You yourself have probably consciously adopted certain language features at some point in your life or in particular situations, and you've probably purposely rid yourself of others too, to project a particular image or to shape who you actually are. So just like previous immigrant groups before them, America's newest immigrants are speaking English. Sometimes it's English with a non-native accent, sometimes it's a mix of English and the heritage language, but most often it's a dialect of English. This may be a relatively neutral type of general American English, or it may be an ethnically marked dialect, like Latino English. Intergenerational language shift has been a fact of life in America's immigrant families for a long, long time. And for those affected, it can be a sad fact. As for me, my mother's side of the family lost Russian in 3 generations. On my father's side, we lost German in just 2. I took German in college, but I barely remember any of it. I tried a few times to take Russian, but it seemed so hard and there was never enough time. So now I mostly use English, though I can get by in Spanish if I have to. Un poquito, anyway. For my family, as for so many other immigrants in America, English represented the way forward. And despite the apparent ubiquity of Spanish in American life, that story continues to repeat itself to this day. Nowadays, Latinos in the United States are increasingly speaking English. And generation by generation, they're moving away from Spanish. But this language shift hasn't diminished the vitality of Latinos' pride in their heritage and culture. If anything, it may have heightened it. For millions of American families, the way forward has been through the distinctive sounds, grammatical structures, and rhythms of Latino English.